mother, wife,
Air Force veteran,
gun rights advocate.
This is Stacy on the Right. Here's your host, Stacy Washington.
You know, it's Friday night when I have my besties on deck. And tonight, starting off hour three, we have the best of the besties, Sergeant Betsy Brantner Smith, retired spokesperson for the National Police Association. She is at Sergeant Betsy Smith on Twitter. Hey, Sergeant Betsy, thank you for coming on tonight.
Hey, it's great to be with you as we head into the weekend.
I'm so excited about the weekend, as always. But before I get to the weekend, every Friday night, we sometimes talk culture. Every now and again, we talk movies and things like that. But one of the cultural phenomenon that is facing us, and I think we're unwilling participants, at least those of us who have common sense and our brains are still working, is the current situation that's going on now that the Defund the Police movement has unfortunately had an impact. And that is that we have fewer officers at now than at any time in the modern era who are serving our communities. And so with fewer officers, that means some services have to be sacrificed. And so the Dallas Police Department is having to make some very difficult choices about how they're going to respond to their residents and serve the community that they are tasked with serving, that they have actually felt is their calling to serve. Talk to us about the Dallas Police Department and what they're doing now.
Well, what Dallas PD had to do is what a lot of police departments have had to do because, as you said, Stacey, 9 out of 10 police departments in this country are now short-staffed. And so Dallas is one of them. Dallas is one of the largest departments in the country. And so they, starting July 3rd, they have put out a list to their citizens of reports that they are going to be taking online or over the phone. And they include things that are logical, like minor traffic accidents when the vehicles are operable, credit card abuse, harassing calls or texts that are not family violence, identity theft, things like that. But also things like car burglaries and reckless damage. And the one that I think really bothers me the most, theft and shop lifting under $2,500. So if you're a small business owner and somebody has come into your store and they have stolen less than $2,500, that's a lot. We're just going to do a phone over the report, or you can jump on your email and file a report. And this isn't the fault of Dallas PD. This is the fault of this last 3 years of the vilification and the demonization of American law enforcement that is causing cops to leave this profession and leaving us with not so many young people coming to take their place.
So I agree with you. Some of the things are kind of logical, right? You might not have a police officer responding to something that's smaller. With a credit card theft, there's no one there to actually arrest, right? They're taking a report, so you could, submit that report online. I remember almost 20 years ago submitting a report like that on the telephone. I realized that the card had been compromised and called over to the police. And when I gave them the details, she filed the report over the phone because she said there's no point in me driving over to file it in person. And also because, they would obviously have an investigation, but the majority of the work that would be done on recouping the losses or following through would be done by the credit card issuer themselves. So I can understand that. Mm-hmm. But retail theft is actually up. The retail theft organization that researches all of this and catalogs all of the data on how many things are being stolen and by whom and where has shown huge increases in retail theft across the country. And it's not particular to drug stores like CVS or anything like that, or it's not just Macy's and department stores. It's everywhere, every kind of store, every size, all are reporting huge upticks in crime. And if you set the lower end of that at $2,500, it's basically a license to steal without any repercussions.
Well, and we see how that has worked out for cities like San Francisco. Another part of this too, the motor vehicle, the minor motor vehicle crashes, that's fine, but that's how we are able to arrest people for things like drunk and drugged driving. And sometimes in those types of crashes, people, their injuries don't surface until later. And again, I understand why they're doing this, but people need to understand that if they have voted for these leftist politicians who want to limit their local police department, they are going to get very limited service. Here where I live in Tucson, Arizona, we have been operating under this type of situation for a couple of years now with the Tucson Police Department, because they have the same levels of staffing now in 2023 that they had in the 1970s when my husband was a rookie there. And so if you want to file a police report in Tucson, it better be pretty dire, or you're just going to have to do it over the phone or, again, via email. And then because they are short-staffed, the follow-up takes longer. And we see this all around the nation: Chicago, Dallas, Houston, Austin, Phoenix, and, of course, famously, NYPD and Minneapolis. I was just in Minneapolis training police officers up there, and now with this DOJ report, there's even more officers who are going to flee that department. And who's going to be left to protect those vulnerable citizens of Minneapolis?
So I just, what do we, like, let's problem solve this a little bit. For jurisdictions that have seen some defunding of the police and they're now experiencing this lower level of service and obviously an uptick in crime, what are some steps that, and I understand that we can't just, you know, level set and give out three quick solutions tonight on the air, and then, you know, within a couple of weeks, you have things back to the glory days pre-COVID before George Floyd. But certainly we can begin to turn the tide and right the ship here. And changing things in public safety is like moving the Titanic. It's not a quick shift and, you know, all of a sudden you've moved. But we have to start somewhere. So what are you recommending to people who are talking to you about this and asking you how we can start to turn the tide in a direction that's beneficial to citizens and the rule of law?
Well, first and foremost, people need to realize their own power. You know, we have seen with various boycotts and things like that, that individuals have power. So if you live in a city that, you know, you don't feel like you're getting the police service that you should, if you know that your police department has been defunded, most have at some point, then you need to attend your city council meetings, attend your county board meetings, and then you also need to express support for your local law enforcement. You know, that most people, you know, the National Police Association has done polling in the past. Most people care about their cops. Most people want more cops, not less cops, in their neighborhood. Most people want their police departments funded, not defunded. The problem is those people tend to be, you know, the working Joes and the working Jills, who are just out there trying to make a living. But what you've got to do is you've got to get involved and do it locally. And again, also support your cops. Get involved in things like Citizen Police Academy or the Back the Blue Flag Waves. That's something that we do around the country. Anything that you can do. And of course, go to our website, nationalpolice.org. And look at our Thank a Cop billboard programs and our Thank You Note programs and things like that. The more support, the more supported, I should say, law enforcement officers feel, the more likely they are to stay. Also pay attention to your local district attorney races, because when we have these woke prosecutors in place, that's where the cops really get frustrated and feel like all the work that they're doing is for naught.
Oh, man. So expressing support for police officers, going to these meetings and letting the elected officials know that, you know, we don't feel like we have enough police. We don't feel like we have enough that we can actually do the things that we want to get to do to get done. We can't have the services that we need and require. And then going to those officers and saying, you know, we want to see more of you. We support you, and asking them what you can do to support them, finding out directly from them what they need to in order to do their jobs, to stick around, and maybe even to speak positively about their work so that other people would want to join the ranks.
I'll tell you what, just walking up to a police officer in a coffee shop, or when you see him on the street or whatever, not involved in you know, any kind of activity, and just walking up and saying, I appreciate you. I just wanted to thank you for your service. That makes a cop, not just their day, but sometimes their whole month. And things like that can just reinvigorate a police officer to go out there and say, all right, I'm going to stay. I'm going to follow my mission. It's for all of us. It's a mission. And we just want to protect the public. And when the public is just expresses 2 seconds of gratitude, gosh, it just makes you continue forward and want to keep doing your job to the best of your ability.
I agree. And I think these are simpler solutions. So let's talk a little bit more about, the understaffing at many big city police departments, because we were talking about Dallas. Obviously, you live in Arizona. You've talked about your local police department there. But this is not just in those two locales. We're talking about the Washington Post reporting on many different police departments that are understaffed. And, of course, the San Francisco Police Department down more than 600 officers, which is almost 30% of their normal staffing level.
Oh, yeah. And we look at Chicago. We look at, NYPD is about to be 4,000 officers short. And when you look at overall crime and how it's being handled in the cities and the rising levels of, not just homicide, but violent crimes like carjackings and, gang-related retail theft. There's these retail theft gangs that are preying on people. And then, other things, just physical assaults, older people being assaulted, things like that. It's affecting the quality of life in all these large urban areas. But I want everybody to understand, too, most police departments in this country, most police departments are less than 10 officers. And yet 9 out of every 10 police departments in this nation right now are shorthanded. So it's not just the big urban areas, but it's the suburban police departments and sometimes the sheriff's departments and the rural police departments as well. This is a crisis for the law enforcement profession. And so that becomes a crisis for this nation. There's a lot of people, Stacey, that are just, they're just scared. And, you shouldn't have to live that way. As I always say, people who don't feel safe aren't free. We want our people to feel free. We want Americans to feel free to move about their community, go about their daily lives, and not have to worry about being the victim of a crime.
And feeling safe or free or safe and free is not, this isn't like some pipe dream or thing that, we're talking about that isn't a normal thing for Americans. This is actually, it's normal for us to feel as if there's police that will respond if we dial 911, as if there is, a good chance that you're going out and you're coming back home completely unmolested. I mean, these are things that weren't a foregone conclusion, an expectation, not really anything extraordinary. You just, hey, you're going out. Oh, see you when you get back. The fact that that's changing in some locales, it should be alarming to us, and we should be looking at exactly how to reverse it immediately.
Well, it used to be, for example, in my native Chicago, you kind of knew which neighborhoods to stay away from if you were a visitor, or you knew the neighborhoods that you wanted to live in. My kids lived in very safe neighborhoods. And really, up until 2020, you could go to New York and feel safe, ride the subway, even if you were a visitor. That was part of the charm of New York. Part of the charm of San Francisco was jumping on a streetcar and touring around the whole city and walking through the parks. So many of those things you cannot do anymore post 2020. And it's really unfortunate because America's losing that that glow, we've got all these quote unquote migrants coming to this country. And one of the things they're saying is we're trying to escape violence. And unfortunately, they're coming here and they're living in more violent areas than even their home countries.
Yeah, I think that's interesting because one of the hallmarks of, I want to go live in America because here we do have a higher level of safety and it's just taken for granted. So when they're coming here and seeing all this crime, you have to wonder, especially after the journey they've undertaken. And obviously, even with our higher levels of crime, it's far better to be here than it is in the countries that they're coming here from. But it still doesn't change the fact that we've had a material difference in the way we're living for us, because this is what we're used to, is not having crime. We're the ones who are suffering under this new or higher crime.
Well, and we are, and our, you know, we have the best criminal justice system in this world, and it's under attack. It's getting misused very often, and we're seeing criminals uplifted as some sort of victims, and we're seeing the victims kind of pushed to the side, and that can, it will not stand for much longer, quite frankly. I mean, we are at a real crossroads here in the United States. And, you know, we thought we were at that crossroads last November. And, but we have seen a lot of these anti-police, anti-criminal justice politicians have been elevated, and they continue to go as far to the left as they possibly can. With really what is turning out to be about a three-tiered justice system, and it shouldn't be. You should, if you're a guy like Daniel Penny, who thinks that he deserves protection on a subway and feels compelled to protect the weak on that subway with him, women and children and elderly people, he should be able to do that without worrying about a political prosecution.
And once the protection has been had, because we're talking about, you know, the possibility that it was an unintentional manslaughter, right? He didn't get on the subway that day intending to hurt anyone. He was acting in defense of self and others. And then you have this unfortunate occurrence where the man, you know, does not regain consciousness. At that point, it's a question of, well, do we want to prosecute him? And political pressures surrounding, you know, any supposed racism, these are not things that should be a factor. And the reason I say that is because of the extensive history that that Neely had with the police, you know, 43 other attacks before the issue at question. So I just, again, it's so wrong.
Well, it is. And, you know, we're kind of reaching a point, and some areas have reached a point, where I think it is stepping back and saying, would I, or maybe I won't, jump in to help somebody, to protect somebody. You know, my husband and I talk about this all the time. You know, we're retired police officers, and we generally are armed. But we talk about, will we step in? And what will make us step in, you know, because it's our nature, it's our habit. And I know a lot of people, you know, most veterans, you know, you're a veteran. Most veterans are the type of people that will step in to help somebody that needs help, whether it's somebody getting across the street or somebody being robbed. Are we kind of beating that out of people now, where people are saying, boy, I don't want to get indicted for manslaughter. I don't want to get arrested. I'm just going to try and save myself or get away myself. And I'm no longer going to help my fellow man. And if that starts to really take hold here in the United States, it's going to be a very sad place for people, because that's one of the things about the United States of America, is we tend to lift each other up and try to help each other, not walk away.
Well, I don't want people trying to decide whether or not they should follow the biblical mandate to act in defense of self or others. I want people to feel not just comfortable, but to feel it is their duty and their honor to do that, and to reach into the lives of other people for the betterment of our entire country. We need to continue that. We need to make sure that we continue that. So,
we do.
Absolutely. Okay, so it's always such a pleasure to have you here. And tell everyone where they can find out more about your organization.
So go to nationalpolice.org. You can find us on Twitter at @NatPoliceAssoc. And you know what we do? We bring attention to all the anti-police efforts that are happening out there. And we ask people just to come and join us and see what we do.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Sergeant Betsy Brantner-Smith. Always a favorite on a Friday night, any night, really. So glad to have you with us.
Hey, enjoy your weekend.
All right, you too. And we'll be back with more Stacey on the Right after this on a Friday. Stay there.